Hi, you're listening to Sequential Statement, a monthly comics and storytelling podcast brought to you by Sequential State, a comics criticism project dedicated to thoughtful commentary and reviews of alternative and independently published comics. I'm Alex.
And I'm Nick.
And this is episode number 2, Hot Archie? Check us out at www.sequentialstate.com and follow the podcast on Tumblr at sequentialstatement.tumblr.com, where you can find links to things discussed in this episode and see additional show notes. This week, we're sharing a story about Space 2015. Space is a smaller indie comics convention in Columbus, Ohio. I went as press, but really more to support Nick, who was there debuting the first two issues of his comic, Multi. Nick, you've been to Space more than I have. How about you give us the rundown on the show?
I've been to Space now. This is my third time. My first time showing a book. I've been there twice, as a just attendee checking it out. I just happened to get a review pass through a comic shop I worked at a few years ago and really enjoyed the show. It's an excellent little indie show. Typically, you don't see a whole lot of people who have any kind of work by any of the big publishers, which is nice, and seeing some new talent. A little bit of diamonds in the rough you kind of find there every once in a while. But overall, it's been a great show. This is their first year, though, at a new venue, or at least it was their first year at a new venue. And I thought the space, the actual venue for it, was beautiful. Worked out really well. Allowed them some extra room for some food trucks, which was a nice addition. And a little more space in general for exhibitors. And from that standpoint, it was a really good affair for most of the people that were there, hopefully, from an exhibitor standpoint, that is. However, this was a different time of the year and different locations, so we noticed that maybe there weren't as many people as there have been in the past, or not as good a flow of traffic, just with probably the people who regularly go to this convention not fitting in where it usually does during the year. But aside from that, it was our first show, and we thought I did pretty good as far as getting my comic out there, Multi, into some new hands, and I met a lot of cool new folk. Alex, you got to talk to some people yourself, right?
Yeah, I got to spend a lot of time talking with Stephen Floyd from 1% Press and with Kevin Zapp from Zapp Books. 1% is based out of Buffalo, New York, and Zapp Books is currently based out of Cleveland, Ohio. So some local publishers, really cool conversations with those folks, and it was a great experience, one of them probably the highlights of my show. Got to meet Tom Spurgeon for the first time, who runs Comics Reporter. That was cool. I wanted to kind of tell the story about getting all the supplies for the table, like, the first morning.
Yeah, because somebody here forgot some scissors.
And a few other things. So so Nick and I are, like, together on this whole show. Like, we're working together. Like, I'm kind of hanging out with him. I'm kind of the support guy for the weekend. We get into the venue, like, an hour ahead of time, and then we realize, oh, boy, we don't have anything. We don't have a tablecloth. We don't have scissors. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll go out and buy the things. So I'm in the middle of Columbus and part of town I'm not very familiar with. And I'm driving. I'm like, oh, there's a Walgreens. So I'll pull in there and they'll have everything. Of course, wouldn't I pick the Walgreens that was going through the store clearance closing in 2 days? So I'm like literally picking through bins of stuff from like a wholesaler, like the totes that they keep product in. And I find a pair of scissors, and I find a really, I don't want to call it amazing, but it is pretty great, plastic tablecloth, bright orange and white gingham. It is something.
I think it was the highlight of the show.
Yeah, that tablecloth was the bomb. And so I'm like checking out with a pretty weird set of items, right? Like craft supplies and snacks, and the lady who's checking me out is very much like, okay. And then of course I need change, right? So after I've bought all the stuff and like walked out, I walk back in and I'm like, okay, could you potentially change this 20 for some ones? And that's where it all goes downhill. Because not only does the cashier not have the ability to do this by herself, they have to call the manager, who, like, wades out of this back room, waist deep in God knows what, commemorative American t-shirts, and is like, well, you know, we normally don't do this, but since we're closing the store in like 2 days, I guess it's all right. And I'm just like trying very hard not to laugh or say anything wrong because I don't want to get kicked out. And also I want this $20 at once. We got the change. We got back, put the really classy tablecloth on the table, had a great time. I had a lot of fun. One of the things I liked the most about the show was a comics reading that was held at Cafe Kerouac.
Yeah, that was really great.
Saturday night. It was hosted by Caitlin McGurk, who is the, I think, the outreach coordinator and one of the curators at the Billy Ireland. So Caitlin brought in a huge group of people to do readings. Nick, one of your favorite folks we were reading.
Yeah, Nate Powell, who is a Eisner Award winner. He's the artist on the great series March. He's actually been going for a long, long time. He likes to, I like to think that he was there before he was famous, probably, but definitely, you know, before he was as well known, for sure. But yeah, he's been working on that series for, you know, being at that show for a long time, and he said he's had a lot of loyalty to it, and he said he was excited to come back again next year when I spoke to him briefly there. So that was exciting. Luckily, he was able to attend. I understand he had an addition to his family that was actually going to keep him away from the show at the beginning of the season. So by them moving it, he actually was able to be there. As a side note, also Joyce Bradner, who was not at the reading but was at the show earlier. She is the wife of the late Harvey Pekar, she was at the show, which was really cool. I got to meet her and get an autograph from her, which was awesome. But yeah, Nate Powell did a reading. It was excellent. I really enjoyed hearing from him. Also, some students from CCAD did some excellent readings of some stories. There were some other folks that you know a little bit better than me as well, right?
Yeah, so Nate was the lead-off reader, I think, and then there were readings by Lauren McAllister, Tom Hart, who is integral to the Sequential Arts Workshop down in Florida, Adam Buttrick, Sophie Goldstein, Stu Race, Novan Skyver, Eric Blair, and then the students from CCAD were Alyssa Sala, Hannah Ross, and Shay Beagle. Some really great comics read. Tom's comic in particular was very affecting, followed by Novan Skyver, who had some of the funniest comics at the reading and really kind of lifted the spirits after Tom's story of his daughter who lost her life. Overall, it was a great reading. Got to hang out with Sophie Goldstein and have a couple beers. It was a delight. I couldn't have asked for a better night out.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole weekend was really nice. I'm looking forward to what comes next year. Hopefully there's a few more people to show up for the exhibitor's sake, that is, for my sake. But, you know, overall, I thought it was a really good first show for us and something I'm definitely looking forward to doing again.
Yeah, I think as long as they keep on running it, and it's a fairly local show, so I really enjoyed myself and had a great time hanging out with Nick and some amazing cartoonists, so I really enjoyed myself. We wanted to touch on a couple pieces of news that I thought were kind of interesting before we get into our reviews this week. The first of which is the fact that Viz Media's Shonen Jump is now being serialized on Comixology, which is kind of following the same lines that they've been going. Like, Viz has had some of their manga titles on Comixology for a while now, but this is the first time that they've had their weekly comics anthology loaded onto the platform. So I think that that's kind of a game changer. Nick, you were the one that pointed this out to me. What did you think about all of it?
Comixology has slowly been adding some manga to it, and they're constantly adding new stuff as well from people who are a little more mainstream, more American comics, a little more. Black Mask Comics just did their debut, I believe, last week on Comixology. So they're slowly adding some new publishers and some new things like this. Hopefully this is good for both organizations. Getting comics into more people's hands is just wonderful, and making Comixology a platform that works and continues to bring in sales just, to me, means that they can do more with their submit program and getting more independent publishers or independent artists and writers on there, which is just, you know, it's great for somebody who's into comics, who is in the industry. To me, that's all good things.
From a more cynical perspective, I think this is a sign that Amazon is clamping its gnarled, nasty hands down onto the comics app marketplace. There are some small competitors, but I think that we're starting to see Comixology become a bigger and bigger piece of the puzzle as other marketplaces start to dwindle. And it's very clear that Comixology has made some gains in the last couple of months with Dark Horse coming on to add not their issues, but their trades. And then this is an additional thing for manga. I think it speaks to the power of Amazon and their place in the market and what we can kind of expect moving forwards.
Right, right.
While I agree that this puts more comics in the face of more people, and ultimately that's good, I think that Amazon consolidating its power share in the app market is a little worrisome.
I see where you're coming from. I mean, I understand that, but for me, as someone who has moved a lot of his reading over to Comixology, just the idea that I can have more and more stuff within that platform, within that ecosystem, is something I'm really, you know, I really like. There's a few things I wish I could see, though. I wish that Amazon would move the books that you have bought through Amazon over to Comixology. I've got a handful of books that I've purchased over the years through Amazon's digital comics that I would love to read on my, you know, in my Comixology app instead. That seems to me like it should be, you know, just a cross-platform, make it work kind of thing, but they haven't figured that out yet, so.
Well, I'm sure it's coming. It's not, that's...
Oh, I don't know. They probably just want me to buy Watchmen for a fifth time, so.
Well, I mean, with DC losing, what was it, $2 billion?
Yeah,
they maybe
yeah,
want I you to buy Watchmen for the...
I'm sure they do.
They'll want you to buy it so many times, you'll have Watchmen copies flying out of your ears.
Yeah, that's about right.
And that's all I really want to say about DC. My guess is that that 2 million, 2 billion, whatever that number is probably the result of some fancy accounting.
At least that's how they'll fix it.
Well, you know, fix everything with accounting.
Yeah.
That's the goal. All right, let's jump into the reviews. The first title we're talking about is Archie numbers 1 and 2. Nick, why don't you tell us what's going on with these books?
Sure. So Archie Andrews, we all know Archie. He's been around forever, or at least he's been around since some of our oldest superheroes and even older than many of our newer ones. Archie Comics recently did a hard relaunch, you know, not even a soft reboots that we do these days, but they relaunched the main series. Archie now is, like always, he's a teenager, he's living in Riverdale, he has his best friend, Jughead. But in this story, we have the gorgeous art, Fiona Staples, we have what I think is some really youthful writing coming from Mark Waid that is giving us a story that I think speaks to youth more than anything else, in that we're seeing a real continuity coming into Archie, something that we can follow with all the ins and outs of being a teenager. In this series, he and Betty, longtime girlfriend in the original comic series, he and Betty had recently broken up. There is a mysterious event known as the lipstick incident that for some reason caused their breakup, and we're kind of left trying to figure out what the pieces were that fell apart that ended their relationship. We all know there's another woman in Archie's life, Veronica, who just kind of get a glimpse of at the end of issue 2, and we also get some backstory into some of the characters. We get a little bit of backstory into Betty, a little bit of backstory into Jughead, all of which will hopefully be expanded as they have later series of their own. Betty and Veronica will be getting a new series here pretty soon, and I believe that Jughead gets a new series here in early October, all of which play into this new look for Archie and new feel for the entire line. I want to say it's definitely not your, like, father's or even grandfather's Archie, because it's been around that long. But it's a, you know, outside of that cliche, it's a really fresh new look at the series.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. This whole reboot of Archie seems really interesting to me because it does a few things that I'm not... how do I say this? It makes me question who the target audience is, right? Because Archie, for the longest time, was like the Archie Digest and the Archie comics were a staple in spinner racks and grocery stores all across the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the target audience was the kid in the grocery line waiting to check out, buy the gallon of milk and the eggs and whatever. And for the longest time, it seems like these Archie comics have not been focused at folks in the what I would call the commercial comics or the comic store scene. And now to start a continuity with Archie, completely reboot everything, and target the comic store,
more
the floppy reader, I guess.
You're more mainstream reader, right?
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering what they're hoping to accomplish with this.
See, I have been thinking about your thoughts on this myself, because I think part of it is that they need to bring in that mainstream reader who every month plucks down $4 for a comic. I think that's an important hope for their market share. But at the same time, I think that trying to hold on to the youths is part of it, too. Yes, this Archie is a little more adult-looking in the presentation of it. Fiona Staples, who you may know from Saga, has a very fresh look, but it's definitely a more mature look than what we're used to with Archie, which was historically very cartoony. The thing is that Archie wasn't really appealing to kids anymore. It might have been read by youth, but it wasn't something that I think that they were really caring to look for. Archie's sales tell me that. You know, Archie is not a strong seller. It happens to be in the digest, but, you know, I think part of that, too, is that Archie also appealed to the people who read it 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, that was also part of their, you know, market or who they were trying to appeal to. This book appeals to younger people, be them teenagers or people in their early 20s, appeals to kind of the same group that had picked up Hawkeye and picked up Saga and picked up Batgirl over at DC. It is a stronger female audience than maybe was actually buying the book before, but the hope is that they're also going to pull in some of the people who, again, will be buying it every single month, be that regular comic shop, you know, people who buy stuff regularly at the comic shops, or those people who are just checking out comics for the first time on Comixology. So I think that all plays in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Archie had probably two main customers before this launch, and that was, like, little kids who were bored and just saw something shiny and wanted it. And then, like, the people that read Archie when they were kids and now are looking to Archie for the nostalgia of their childhood, which is a wonderful commercial model, right? Nostalgia sells really well. I think that this change-up is interesting, and, you know, from what the anecdotal things I've heard is that the young people, like the 10-year-olds, the 9-year-olds, the 11-year-olds that are reading this actually really enjoy it. I'm not sure what the sales numbers look like, but from my own eye, I'm looking at this comic, and what I'm seeing is stuff that I really like. It's mm-hmm. It's got great coloring. Staples art, as you mentioned, her lines are there. It seems like maybe a little bit bolder, maybe a little less loose than Saga, but really dynamic in their own way. If you like the art in Saga, you're gonna like the art in Archie. I think that's a given. But the coloring is really good in this book as well.
Yeah, there's something to be said there. Saga is the art is all done by Fiona on those. She puts down the line work and then she colors it herself. This does have a different color, a different inker. The coloring is by, I'm going to say this name wrong, Andre Simankiewicz. If you're listening, I apologize. With Jen Vaughn. And they're coloring her work, so it helps to get that out a little bit quicker. But it also results in, you're right, that bolder line, which in some ways it works really well in keeping Archie with that little more cartoony style than maybe Saga has. So that's a nice change of pace, if you will.
Yeah, I think that this looks good. It certainly looks like a book that I would read. There are some things in it that make me feel like it's a little stiff, but I mean, for the most part, it hits some of the beats pretty well, and it's kind of funny here and there, and it's charming enough for me to be like, yeah, I could read this. It's not offensive, and it doesn't really take any risks. I think for a lot of folks, that's going to be good enough. I wonder what its staying power is if it continues to not be offensive and not take risks. But in the end, I think that it looks nice, and it's doing enough things fairly okay that I think it's here to stay.
Yeah, if anything, Archie has proven that he has staying power, that the Archie gang has interest, and hopefully that continues to be with this new series, because I myself am all on board. I'm looking forward to continuing to read Archie. I am looking forward to this Jughead series, and I'm looking forward to the other series, the Betty and Veronica, and then this Kevin Keller series, who was introduced toward the end of the Archie run, who changed, you know, a lot of opinions as well. If anything, Archie has been doing a lot to turn heads recently, which is really saying something for a company that for so long really worked on keeping a status quo. I just hope that this isn't a one-trick, you know, a one-trick wonder, a one-hit pony, whatever cliche you want to use there. I hope that the most stunning thing in this is not just that they rebooted the line, but that they have some good ideas behind it. And quite frankly, in Mark Waid, I trust. I love this writer. He's been doing some excellent, excellent work recently. And I think this is just a further proof that he has some good ideas and some good vision, and hopefully those visions continue for this Archie series moving forward.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm willing to at least casually look at it. And I don't think that we will ever be able to completely answer the question, at least you and I, Nick, about who the audience is for this book, because I still have big questions about it. But I think that overall it's a fun-looking book. It's funny, it's cute. I think that you could do a lot worse.
Oh, definitely.
Now, that book is a lot different than the next one we're going to talk about, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce this one for us. The book is The End of Summer by Tilly Walden. It's an 88-page graphic novel from Avery Hill Publishing, a small press from London. Tilly Walden is a student at the Center for Cartoon Studies in Vermont. The End of Summer is Walden's first graphic novel, and I think it beautifully captures the relationship between two twins, Lars and Maja, in a story set in a royal mansion beset by a seemingly never-ending winter. Lars, who is chronically ill, is separated from much of the family much of the time, and the cast is this sprawling family and their servants. The small character traits blossom into mental illness under the duress of confinement. Lars, the main character, spends a lot of time contemplating death and disappearance because he is so ill, and the comic has a poetic flow that accentuates the contrast between Lars' chronic illness and the madness that is consuming each of the cast members. I really like the way this book looks. Walden has a very expressive, illustratorly style. Soft lines contrast against the hard, tall, imposing mansion, which seems to be its own character in this comic. Walden has a good eye for human interaction and facial expressions. What did you think, Nick?
I enjoyed quite a bit of it. Definitely a little bit different than what I typically read. I'm a more mainstream reader by far. So this kind of story being very self-contained like this, while I read a lot like this, it definitely is a little bit of a difference every now and then from reading month-to-month books. Some things I really enjoyed about it, though, were, like you said, the art. The characters themselves didn't quite do it for me as much as maybe you'd... something I kept feeling like throughout this story was that we got a good idea of who Lars was, and definitely through at least the two main characters, Lars tends to be the one that we hear the most of. It's really told from his perspective. But we don't get a whole lot of, you know, explanation into their parents. We don't know much about their siblings, except that some of them are motivated by, you know, one character trait or another. But aside from that, you know, it really does a nice job of, within a small space in this book, showing us a story within a smaller space, which is in this house, that, well, big in scale. I mean, enough so that they have a sailboat that's within their indoor pool. Everything is really contained to this small, small place, within these walls of this this mansion, this castle up there, and it makes it very interesting. I'd be remiss if I didn't name Nemo the cat, who really stole my heart in this story. Lars being sick, he rides around this giant cat throughout the story, which is really, really fun. Though, as I think about it, the name Nemo seems to be quite fitting, because this feels a lot like Winsor McCay's Little Nemo in Slumberland. There's something about the art that's very reminiscent of that comic from the past. So I like that as I'm thinking about it, looking back at this story, and how that kind of reminds me or ties me into that.
You're right, Nick. I do see some Winsor McCay in The End of Summer. One thing that is particularly fascinating about this comic is Walden's control of the space her characters inhabit. Despite the mansion being so massive, it feels like the building is actively pressing down on its inhabitants the longer the narrative progresses. there's a deafness to that. I thought it was quite emotionally affecting.
Right.
One of the things that I think sets great comics apart from good and okay comics is their lack of ability to be easily translated into other media. This topic came up before, actually came up in our pre-podcast chatter, and I think it's a measure of the end of summer because this comic isn't easily translated. The comic we're going to be reviewing next, however, certainly is. Walden uses some techniques that I think put you in the mind of the character. There are some instances where Walden lines up figurines or shows running motors when characters are playing games or reading books, and makes things fall in a certain way that I think could only be adequately expressed by comics. So I think that's important.
Yeah, it definitely kind of sits on its own that way. The way that we get shots of different characters, and in short, it could be emulated, but I don't think it could ever be told in quite the same way, and I don't think it should be. This works really well as a graphic story and really succeeds in that respect.
One thing that I wanted to mention that I kind of glanced over at the very beginning was that Maja and Lars are twins, and at the end of this book, Walden dedicates it to her twin brother. I think it's fairly safe to say that Walden is using her relationship with her twin as the source material for this relationship in the comic. As a twin myself, there's something very intimate about the portrayal of this relationship, something that strikes home for me, because I think that resonates with my lived experience. I think that the relationship between Lars and Maja is very well constructed, and it feels true. And I think, to that extent, this is the reason why the book succeeds so well for me personally. Ultimately, and I know we want to kind of put a bookend on this review, I think that The End of Summer is a fascinating piece of fiction from an artist that more people should be paying attention to. This is a great first work, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out from Walden in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely looking forward to what else we can see from her in the future.
All right, so last up is we're reviewing the complete run of Alex and Ada, a book from Image. Nick, why don't you run it down for us?
Sure. So this series just had its last trade paperback come out earlier this month, so do check that out if this interests you. I believe it's a 13-issue run, which just ended recently. Alex and Ada takes place in the near future, and in this particular world, we see that robotics have changed a lot in the next few years. People have robots that are in their homes as personal assistants, as companions, and just as, you know, things that help them throughout their regular day. We also see some changes in, you know, the way the internet is done in the future. All of it makes for a really interesting and immersive storyline. In Alex and Ada itself, the story is about Alex, who is gifted an android by his grandmother. He names her Ada. And the two of them begin to form a relationship throughout the story. And we see that there's a discussion on sentience. How that plays out into the series is really kind of the main thrust of what the series is. It lays out not so much an argument, but it does lay out a story in how that works out there. I found it to be a really neat book. It's by Jonathan Luna, who did Girls and the Sword, did the book Ultra, and it's co-written by Sarah Vaughn, who did a book called Spark Shooter. But I really enjoyed this. The Luna brothers are not someone I typically, you know, not a group I've typically checked out. I have read some of Girls. I've read a few issues of Sword. They were not necessarily my cup of tea, but I liked this story that was really at its heart a love story, but really was kind of gripping. I really got into these two characters and really enjoyed where they ended up taking them.
Yeah, we talked about a little bit about The End of Summer, how it wouldn't be a piece of fiction that you could translate easily to another medium like film, and I think that the exact opposite is true here with Alex and Ada. This whole comic feels like storyboards for a TV show to me.
Yeah. And especially when you're reading this in something like Comixology, going back to that yet again. But it's perfect for the Comixology guided view, for me anyway. There's not a whole lot of movement in the characters. Alex, you had kind of mentioned that they're a little bit stiff in here in our discussions. And I think that works perfectly when you're watching the panels transition from one to another. That really comes across very well with that guided view storytelling. It's, in some ways, this near future storyline is kind of perfect for a near future technology like that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Stiff, and I understand from what you've told me, Nick, that this is the art style of the Lunas. I kind of find it disconcerting. It's really, like, mannequin-y, and I kind of expected a little bit of that because we're dealing with androids and robots, etc. The art is so stiff and almost disjointed in its way. Every time I see a story like this where it's like, we're thinking about robot sentience and what does that mean for humanity, and we think about all the junk that is kind of coupled to that idea, like the singularity, etc., etc., I keep on thinking about stories in the recent past that I've read that kind of remind me of this. And so, in some ways, I'm kind of reminded of a manga by Clamp, which is it's a group that had all of their stories now are published through Dark Horse, previously published by Tokyopop, which is kind of defunct, kind of publishing, just English stuff, kind of, no, 100% terrible. And this book is called Chobits, and it's about this guy who finds this robot and turns out that she's this really special type of robot that has sentience. And Chobits is a lot more convoluted and weird than Alex Nada ever gets. And in some ways, Alex Nada is probably the most normal of all of the recent media that I've seen about this specific idea. But in that normality is kind of its downfall for me, because it's not really super interesting. There's some cool concepts, but I don't know how many images of a android eating a bagel I can really look at. Like, it's not really that spectacular to me.
I can understand that and deal with that. It really did it for me. In a different way. I thought that it worked really well as an interpersonal story. So as you mentioned Chobits, I kept thinking about, when I was reading this book, kept thinking about Her, the Spike Jonze movie. I think that's really where the comparisons came in for me. Obviously, in that movie, we have Joaquin Phoenix, who falls in love with his operating system, who in that movie is played by, or at least voiced by, Scarlett Johansson. And that also deals a little bit with the idea of sentience, although in a different way. But I really like how I was drawing comparisons between that movie and this book. It kind of worked in a sweet way for me.
Yeah, to some extent, this relationship, like, in some ways, maybe the protagonist in this book, Alex, is a little too aspirational. He seems to have nothing but good intentions. Maybe because of that, it's missing some humanity, I guess. I agree that the characters are fairly well fleshed out, and the development of the relationship feels fairly natural. But I just don't think that I can get over the art and really some of the other stuff that's going on here that maybe I'm not a huge fan of.
Mm-hmm.
When you compared this book to Her, the first thing I thought was, it felt like to me, even despite the fact that this runs for 13 books and is a much longer narrative than perhaps Her, I really felt that Her was a lot more complex and a lot more, the characters were much more lived in and real. Maybe that's just the difference between the movie and reading a comic book. Or maybe it's just my inability to put people onto these cardboard cutouts.
I can see that to an extent. Although, I think that with Her, it was telling a different story. This one definitely deals a lot more in the political issues that are involved with androids, with artificial intelligence, in a way that was not dealt with in Her. So that adds a different layer to this. There's a different element there. But yeah, I can see that. For me, though, I thought the characters did work. At least the two main characters worked pretty well. But, that's the problem sometimes with dealing with this medium. If the art is not there, and if it's really completely, something you can't deal with, something you viscerally have a reaction to, a negative reaction to, that sometimes means that you just can't get past that. And I can understand it. I don't agree. I really enjoyed this book, and I thought the art worked for it. And it for me, it told a really kind of cute story. So that's just what my thoughts were on that.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
So with that, let's move on really quick with a bit of a wrap-up. Alex, have you been doing anything aside from reading comics recently?
For my recommendations this week, there's a couple books that I've been reading. I've been keeping an eye on the Hugo Awards. That whole business has been really interesting to me, and I've got some stuff to look at now because of that. But the book that I've been just finished, the book that I've been reading recently, is A Darker Shade of Magic by Victoria Schwab. It's the first of what's going to be a series from Tor. It features a planeswalking type character who is able to move between various different Londons, each of which have some key unifying features, but are vastly different in terms of the way that the place looks and how the world works and what magic is like and etc. So it's a really fascinating story, two really great main characters, and a really fun adventure. So I really liked it, and I recommend it. And as long as your fragile masculinity isn't impeding your ability to enjoy good television, then I'd recommend that you check out the latest season of Project Runway. We're on season 14. I have to admit, this is one of my guilty pleasures, and I love talking to cartoonists about it. It seems like a lot of cartoonists, at least in the indie set, seem to like this show. So we're moving along in the series. I've watched every season for the past 5 years, I think. It's definitely a show that I make sure to TiVo.
Well, I haven't watched Project Runway in a very long time, probably because my wife isn't as into it as I am. But something we have watched recently, we just finished the first season of Married. It's a new show from FX. It was, we finished that on Hulu, where it's streaming right now. You can still catch the full first season there. It stars Nate Faxon and Judy Greer. It is a kind of dark look at marriage, if you will. Which for newlyweds is probably not a great a great precursor or you know, showing where we're at. No, I'm kidding. But it was a really good show, and we're really liking it. We're in the middle of season two right now. I think we're probably getting close to wrap up of that season. But a really, really strong show. FX is kind of pumping out some really good stuff right now, and I think this is one of their crown gems. I also just finished watching Catastrophe. It is a series that is streaming exclusively from Amazon Prime. So if you're a subscriber to Amazon Prime, you have access to that. It is written and starring Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney. It takes place in the UK about a couple that recently finds out they're pregnant, and then we see the story evolve from there. It is also kind of dark, but deeply, deeply, intensely funny, and really very sweet and charming. So I really recommend that series if you've not watched it already. Catastrophe from Amazon. Hopefully we'll see a second season here very soon.
You know, I need to use that Amazon Prime a little bit more before I stop buying things from Amazon completely.
It's well worthwhile, and I understand there's even Hannibal, which just ended its series run. I understand it is streaming exclusively on Amazon, so if you've not caught up with that, I understand it. Well, it's past the time where you could have caught new episodes, but it's definitely worth checking out if you've not watched that yet.
All right, well, I need to set aside a little time to do some TV watching then.
And maybe read a few less comic books.
That's a non-starter, Nick. Sorry. There's too many books in this house. If I stop, then I will be completely overwhelmed and buried in a pile of books.
Well, I think that does it for us. Thanks for listening to Sequential Statement. Links to the media discussed on this show are in our show notes. Our theme music is by Today's Man off their self-titled album. I'm Nick.
And I'm Alex.
And we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.